Hi, I'm Jeff Stelling, and this is Football's Greatest. Each week, I'll be sitting down with a legend to discuss and debate some of the best exponents of the beautiful game. Well, it promises to be a great summer for Scotland and Germany when they take on the hosts in their opening game in the Euros. And with me is a man who knows a thing or two about playing in a major tournament for Scotland, Charlie Nicholas.
After 20 minutes, Maradona ignored everybody. Out the way, and just kept pointing at Hoddle and saying to Arbeiros, give the ball to Hoddle. And see, when you played against him, see, you're having a nightmare. He would say, don't worry about it, son, it'll get better. It made you feel worse. But I remember playing against Gentile at Juventus, and he was brutal. He'd like, pull your ear, and all the wee silly things, but really annoying things.
You've got fond memories or disappointing memories?
Tremendous memories of the World Cup, Jeff, really did. I wasn't anticipating going. Jock Steen, before we lost him in the Wales game, had stopped picking me for the national team because I joined Arsenal. He wanted me to join Liverpool. And kind of
sorry, so he stopped picking you because you joined Arsenal?
Yeah, we had a discussion. Jock never really came and watched Arsenal. He would never come that far south. So he came to Anfield, and we always lost Anfield, so we got beat at Anfield. And he had a word after with me saying, I chose the wrong club, and I thought, there's nothing I can do about that now. At that time, I actually thought I was playing okay. I thought I should still be in the squad, but he just said that I was having a bad time and didn't pick me. So I kind of was floating at that time, thinking it's not to be. Because in 82 World Cup, when he was a manager, I was quite young at Celtic, obviously, but then I broke my leg. So it kind of denied me the chance to even force my way into that World Cup. But in 86, then Fergie took over, temporary charge. And we went to Aston Villa away, and he came to the game. He was still Aberdeen manager, but he came to the game. And he spoke to me afterwards and said, I don't know why you've not been in the squad. I hear you're still playing well. Because we don't see much of you in Scotland, everybody thinks it's the opposite. I wasn't scoring goals. So eventually he put me in the squad, and then I made the World Cup. So that was a memory of the build-up to it, and then I got in the squad. Unfortunately, King Kenny, my hero, had a knee issue, so he didn't go. But tremendous 6 weeks. We met and had 6 weeks together. Absolutely stunning time. We let the nation down again, though, not qualifying. That was the one thing we should have done against Uruguay in the last game. We missed it.
It was one heck of a squad, yeah. That is for sure. Look, we're going to talk, you've had a glittering career in England and in Scotland. We're going to talk about the best five players that you've played with or against. And I was really surprised to see the first name on your list because he played for Spurs. And as an ex-Arsenal man, are you allowed to say Glenn Hoddle?
I can see whoever I like, whether it's Arsenal, Spurs or whoever. I've been blessed to have played with some world-class players. I've played against many world-class players. Platini, Cruyff, he's there.
Yeah? What made him special?
Oh, he's talent. He's all-round talent. Rhythm, style. He used to say in those days, if you were over 6 foot tall, oh, what a nice touch he's got for a big fella. What a stupid comment I always thought that was. And this guy made that comment absolutely a mockery of it. He scored fabulous goals from inside the penalty box, outside the penalty box. I just thought he was a footballing genius. When I hear the modern day players, and I understand my old mate Paul Merson and lots of others saying Gascoigne was the best they ever seen, I thought Hoddle was the best English player I ever came across. I think he was better than Gascoigne. It's only my opinion. I just think all round as a footballer, he was truly gifted. And he knew he was gifted, so he could do amazing things. When I was at Arsenal, sometimes we played a Tuesday, and then Spurs would play. We were both at home midweek, and Spurs would play on the Wednesday. We sometimes used to go and watch Spurs, because we love football. Sure, we were Arsenal fans, we didn't like Tottenham. That was the way it was. But we used to go and watch the opposition on the Wednesday night. Anyway, it was a testimonial for Ozzy Ardiles, and Maradona came over from Italy because he played an Argentinian World Cup with Ardiles. And after 20 minutes, Maradona ignored everybody. Out the way, and just kept pointing at Hoddle and saying to Ardiles, give the ball to Hoddle, just give the ball. Because Maradona knew wherever he moved, Hoddle could find him. He was the best player in the world by a distance at that time. And Hoddle lit his night up. We were there, and Graham Ricks, my mate, and Kenny Sands, we looked at each other going, wow. Maradona's telling everybody to give Hoddle the ball. It was extraordinary. I thought he was an absolutely magnificent footballer.
Brilliant. You did yourself a favour with Arsenal fans, didn't you, anyway? Because you scored twice against Spurs on Boxing Day. Yes, so that was guaranteed.
That was always my bailout.
Yeah, that you were guaranteed to be loved by Arsenal fans thereafter. I think that was Boxing Day 1983. So let's add an Arsenal player to the list, shall we? A fullback who I often think of as being a, you know, almost a forgotten brilliant player.
Yeah, Kenny Sansom. His nickname was Shades from Tiswas, the little comedy show it used to be on a Saturday, because he was small. But in those days, everybody used to say, oh, the big centre forwards will drift off and they'll go against a little left back and they'll dominate him in there. Of course, but that can be said of any fullback, whether you're 6 foot or whether you're 5 foot, 6 or 7. It made no difference. But there's a difference in technical gifts that, for me, defending is a skill. There's an art to defending. Not so much now, but back in those days there was. And physically, Kenny wasn't really that aggressive. But he had tremendously quick feet. He used to stoop into challenging and try and toe poke the ball off you. Because that meant if he could do that, he was actually gliding by you. So in a way, it was like a dribble. That's how he used to treat the opposition. But when you played against him in training, you could beat him. And within 3 seconds, he was back in front of you again. He just had this remarkable turning ability. He was so quick in the turn. Lovely left foot. Great, great left foot. Didn't have a right foot at all, but lovely left. But loved bombing forward. So enthusiastic. Training every day. Impressions of people. Great fun to be with. But he was a stunning footballer. When I went to Arsenal, I didn't feel overawed by talent. There were some very talented players there, but when I look back at that time when I first arrived, Pat Jennings was there. And Pat Jennings was obviously a legend of a goalkeeper for one catching it with one hand and the throw out. But I only did one season with Pat. For the period that I was at Arsenal and Kenny was there, most of them, I generally did feel that he was a world-class footballer. He felt that way every day when you'd play against him or play with him. And just a little maverick of an individual who was causing his own issues, a bit like myself, but at the same time, the desire, and I think when it proved when he went to England, I don't think England for that spell could have done without him. There was no replacement really for Kenny. So he kept 90-odd caps, I think it was. Only when I seen Ashley Cole after about 2 or 3 seasons did I think there was something who was finally replacing that type of player. And Kenny had so much ability, both defensively and attacking, but a great guy with it. I thought he was a world-class left-back in every way, shape and form.
Yeah, I mean, I think when people talk about England fullbacks now, you know, they'll talk about the Gary Nevilles and the Kyle Walkers and the Stuart Pearce, but they forget that Kenny Sansom won more caps than any of them. Mm-hmm. I agree with you. I spent quite a lot of time with Kenny and he's a lovely fella. He's had his demons, obviously, but a lovely fella. I think he was involved in the move that led to your winning goal in the League Cup final against Liverpool as well.
Yes, he was. Him and Perry Groves were both in it. And the nice thing about that also, Jeff, is that he lifted the cup. You know, sometimes people forgot that because we were never quite sure Dave O'Leary or Tony Adams. But when he managed to get his hands on it, I've never seen delight like it, you know, because, like, I'd won things at Celtic. And people might say, well, you get that. And I was ever so thrilled to finally get my hands on a trophy at Arsenal. It was the reason I was there. But finally to get one, it made so much difference to me personally. But to him, the party afterwards, we could not get him to shut up. He was non-stop. It was a Prince Charles. It was Norman Wisdom. He was hours and hours and hours being Norman Wisdom. He was hilarious. But the winning mentality that he showed that day, after all his caps and lifting that trophy for him, I think we were all as pleased for him more than anybody else. I got a bit of the special treatment because obviously a very, very fortunate second goal, but because it was kind of known as my game, beating Rushed that scores for Liverpool, never loses. But for Kenny, I think we were all more thrilled for Kenny than anybody else that day.
Well, you've just slipped in the third player on your list there as well, Ian Rush.
Yeah.
Chester to Liverpool, to mm-hmm. Juventus. That doesn't happen often,
does
it?
That doesn't happen a great deal. When I first came in 83, myself, Glenn and Rushy, we were all signed up by Nike to wear the boots. And we were doing a promotional day at Queen's Park Rangers. So we were doing all the promotion on how you kick the angle of your boot and all this type of stuff. And I was speaking to Rushy, and he was quite a shy guy. And he was saying that he found it hard to settle in to Liverpool, and he found it pretty over the top, the wind-ups from Kenny and Hansen and all them. He said it didn't always go down that well with them. But as a team, they were just like so together. But then when you start to watch Ian Rush about his movement, and people say, now the pressing game. And people say the players in those days could never play. I think Ian Rush invented the pressing game that I can remember. He used to push up and take on defenders 2-3 at a time. He'd always close them down, close them down, close them down. So he'd done all that graft, knowing fine well that the Dugluises or Soonises or Ronnie Whelans would get a pass. He was ready and alert because he was always high up the pitch to get on or in behind defenders. He was a very cunning and clever mover as well as a footballer. Great one-on-one finisher. Bobby Lennox was the best I'd ever seen going through and go with a goalkeeper. Never missed or never went into miss. When you see a lot of players, Jeff, going in situations, they hope to score. Ian Rush never hoped to score. Ian Rush was going to score. When he went one-on-one with people, it could have went in any different angle, under the keeper, through his legs, over the keeper. One-on-one finisher was the best I've ever seen. And I know he got great credibility because he's goal-scoring record for Liverpool, especially Liverpool. But I think sometimes you have to make that run to let Kenny see that pass. And that's a skill. That is a skill. They don't always get the praise enough for it. But I thought he was as good a finisher as I've ever came across.
Yeah, I was looking at some of the strikers that you played with, and most of them were nothing like Ian Rush. It was Big Nile, wasn't there?
Yeah.
Paul Mariner, Tony Woodcock, Frank McGarvey. Who was the best of them?
I think talent-wise, my best partner personally was Frank McGarvey when I was a kid, and Frank's movement was a bit like Rush's. He didn't have the clinical finishing or the technical gifts of Ian Rush, but his movement was so good that everywhere he moved, I just would retake his space, which meant I used to get it into feet. But that would give me 2 seconds to either turn or have enough space to do what I wanted to do. His movement was fantastic for me, and we understood that. But we didn't speak about it as a partnership, it just happened. So I think when you get other people like that, but when I went to Arsenal, I struggled a bit because of the style of play. But Tony Woodcock was probably my best gifted partner. Great finisher, great pace, lovely fella also, got on really well with him. But Gilhouse was good at Aberdeen. McGarvey was very good for me at Celtic, but Woodcock was probably the pick out of the all-round talent.
I hope you're enjoying the show. We can't do it without you. If you're listening to us on your favourite podcast platform, please press follow to make sure we're in your feed every week. Two to go, Charlie, and the next is a fella who was a friend to both you and I, and we lost him far too soon, of course. A brilliant player, what a gentleman as well. It's Ray Wilkins.
Yeah. He was, I remember seeing Ray when he was young at Chelsea. I think he was captain very young also, wasn't he?
Yeah.
So it showed an authority within him. But we went to Chelsea, they came up into the old First Division. And their pitch, start of the season, first game of the season at Stamford Bridge, and it was just covered in hay. There was no grass on it. But Mickey Droy was this big physical presence at Chelsea, and he was a big statement maker. The fans loved him. And he was having a testimonial. So we played in the testimonial, I played in the testimonial, and I had a bit of time with Ray for a couple of drinks after the match. And I said, how can you play in a pitch like this? It's impossible. He said, strangely enough, you do get used to it. He says, but how can it be like that? He says, the Brazilians train on the beach, Charlie, so why can't we play on a beach? It's a poor excuse if we can't get the ball down and play. So he had always this incredible philosophy of getting the ball down and making the ball do the work. And then people, Tommy Docherty, I think, said he went square and square and square and square. He only went square if he had to. He'd pass it into feet if he had the opportunity. If you were a good enough mover, he could find you. And I just thought all round, everywhere Ray Wilkins went, other than the time I disliked him because he joined Rangers, but every other place he went, especially when he went abroad, was stunning. And I remember Graham Wright, Kenny Sansom and Tony Woodcock all coming back and raving about Hoddle. But Wilkins was in of the same chat you were getting. Stunning footballer. Lovely fella. Everything was fella. How are you, mate? Lovely. Hiya, chaps. Just a happy-as-go-lucky, enthusiastic footballer you could ever wish to come across.
As a commentator, he would hate to criticise anybody. Yeah. He did it in the gentlest way possible.
Yeah, and see, when you played against him, see, you're having a nightmare. He would say, don't worry about it, son, it'll get better.
Yeah.
And it made you feel worse because he was identifying that you weren't playing the ball. But that's what he was. He would talk you through a game and he was only being helpful. The most understanding individual I'll probably ever came across on a football field.
Yeah, and I think that tag, you know, that he passed the ball square all the time, it stuck with him, unfortunately stuck with him, because he was one of the first really to appreciate the fact that to play football, you need to keep the football. And that's what he did.
That's what he did. I mean, modern day terms, you'd be jumped through.
Oh.
Any situation, you'd be jumped through to go and say, who am I buying? Oh, Ray Wilkins, holding midfield player. Oh, thanks very much. Could Chelsea do with him right now? Better believe. I mean, he just knew. He had a great intelligence about him. And I think when he went to Italy especially, I think even though the Italians were starting to say, this guy can play.
Yeah.
He's not just a holder. He can play. And he could.
Well, you look at what Chelsea paid for Enzo Fernandez.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah, and it's not a bad CV, Ray Wilkins, is it? Chelsea, Manchester United, Milan, PSG, Rangers, and, of course, England as well.
Yeah.
Underappreciated, I think, Charlie.
Definitely, but a much-loved guy. I mean, yeah. I've never heard any other footballer have a bad word to say about Ray Wilkins.
Now, we asked for five of the greatest players that you'd ever played with or against, and people might have been able to pick out, you know, Ray Wilkins or Glenn Hoddle, Ian Rush, maybe Kenny Sansom as well. But I don't think many people would pick out your fifth selection. Tell me about him.
Well, it's Kevin Ratcliffe, and he was... I always had the great understanding of the game that you would appreciate and hold your hands up when someone you were playing against, especially a one-on-one situation, you found it troublesome. It was a real challenge. You would have a good day, but you would have some awkward days. And I played against a lot of guys who were very physical towards me in terms of the tackle from behind was allowed in, so I used to get kicked quite a lot and had to accept it. And I just got on with it. You know, so-called hard men, the Graham Roberts and all these type of players, they were tough, but I played against so many tough players that really didn't put me off. It was playing against somebody who was a bit different. Hansen was kind of on that category, but he was a very, very smooth footballer from the back. And then you would look at different other players that you could have a go at, smaller players who might be quick, but could be a bit rash in the challenge or poor with the ball. And you think, I could maybe get a chance off him. Ratcliffe, when Everton was struggling, I think it was 84, we beat them at Highbury 1-0, I scored a penalty. I think Howard Kendall was on the edge of being sacked. I think they went to Oxford the following week and won in the cup, who I think had put us out in that cup. And the turnaround starting to happen. And then we went to Goodison at the end of that season, and I played against him. And I bounced off him. He was stronger, he was quicker. There was an authority about him. But there was a real toughness about him that he would hit you, but not just for the sake of kicking you. There had to be a process in it. And I think it's no surprise when I look back and people like Peter Reid and Graham Sharp and Neville Southall, Gary Stevens, Trevor, all these type of guys at Everton, quite rightly, are applauded. I thought he was the unsung hero of this team. I thought he had an authority, a real aggression about him, and he could play. He'd have left foot that he could clip it long into Sharpie especially, and he was pretty assured, but he was also quick. He was quite a dynamic guy, you know what I mean? I'm pretty sure that when Peter Reid played with him, he must have thought, I don't need to protect him, probably need to protect the others, but not so much him. And it probably will surprise people, but I think there's always someone that I think I remember. I remember playing against Gentile at Juventus, and he was brutal. He'd like pull your ear and there's all the wee silly things, but really annoying things. This guy just took your head on. And if you had a good day against him, he shook your hand firmly and said, well done. And I did the same for him. I thought, goodness me. They beat us 6-1 at Goodison 1 year. And I think I scored after about 10 minutes. We went 1-0 up. And after that, I could not get a breath. He just bullied me. And I don't mean that and just kicking me. He just overran me. He just seen me off. And then they overpowered us.
I mean, he read the game brilliantly as well, didn't he? So that made him look even quicker, to be honest.
It probably did. But I think, you know, I think what was happening with that Everton turnaround at that time is that he became the master of letting Mountfield or whoever would play centre-half beside him go and do their job. And then he was an authority. And I think that was quite old-fashioned in a way. Willie Miller did it at Aberdeen and Hansen did it for a while in a different way at Liverpool. But, you know, Phil Thompson, Bobby Moores, they all structured it that they could do that thing with the big, tall centre-half. But he had the quickness and an aggression about him that was never to be questioned. And I think when I look back in that success of that Everton side, that he was the one that I think was the most underrated. Quite rightly, the keeper gets a lot of praise because he was a great, great goalkeeper.
Big Neville Southall.
Yeah, but I really do think that Kevin Ratcliffe never really got the credit that he deserved.
And I think if people are surprised, they just need to look at his honours list, because they won the 1984 FA Cup final, they won two league titles, and they also won the European Cup Winners' Cup. And in that run in the European Cup Winners' Cup, I noticed that they didn't concede a single goal until they got to the semi-final against Bayern. I mean, they beat Bayern.
Yep.
That was the first goal they'd conceded, which tells you a lot about their defensive qualities. I mean, they had a bit of a threat at the other end. He was called Andy Gray, who we both know as well, who I think scored in the semi-final and the final.
Well, I got to know Sharpie, Graham Sharp, a bit, and obviously I knew Andy well from our Sky days together. And obviously when they were at Everton, they were saying, the times were good then, Jeff, because in proper old-fashioned football terms, it was win or lose, you said hello and well done to the enemy or the opposition, whatever it may have been in your head that day. So he would have a glass of wine or something with him after the game. And that was just the way it was. Sportsmanship, old-fashioned sportsmanship, I suppose. But I remember speaking to the lads, because they'd be in the Scotland squad with me, and they would say, oh, Kevin definitely said, don't like playing against him in training. And I could see why, because he would take everything on, you know. I just looked at him and the balance and who I played against and who I really respected. And there was some players who were problematic and gave me a hard time. And, you know, Hansen was quality. Lawrenson was quality. The two of them were really, really good individuals. But they were footballing, thinking centre-backs. I think Ratcliffe, he had the both end of the scale. But also that quickness that he had. It was hard to really turn and take him on. And if he did, you didn't want to see him again. But he could get back. That was the other problem with him. So he was a real problem for me.
So he didn't kick you. I've got to ask you, who did?
Predominantly in the London derbies, Graham Roberts was forever giving me a good kicking.
It wasn't just you.
No, that was the good news. It wasn't personalised. No, I think more or less because the old-fashioned, you know, the kick from behind was allowed in those days. So anything went, really, then. You know, I mean, they were all big, aggressive players, really, back then. One of the ones who recently lost a great friend of ours and always Big Gordon McQueen.
Yes.
Big Gordon was, for a big physical guy, was another one who didn't really come aggressively and kick you. You know, he liked to do his own thing. One of the hardest I came across and all was Colin Todd. Colin Todd, I was tempted. I didn't play against him too often, but he was like Ratcliffe. That's how I picked him. I played against Colin Todd when he played for Nottingham Forest. And who was it? I think Larry Lloyd, I think, got sent off or one of the defenders got sent off and he accused me of cheating. I thought, the referee's decision on him. How did I cheat? I mean, you're allowed to kick. Well, when I mentioned the kick from behind, I got it. Every 10 seconds, he was there. And he was a real good footballer. He was tough. He was very, very tough also. But I think I had to go for the Everton defender.
Just a final thought, Charlie, because we're asking about, you know, the best players that you've played with or against. If you were playing now, who do you most like to play with? Is there a player that stands out as someone you'd love to play in the same team with?
Oh, there's probably lots. I mean, I'm a great believer in the modern day way because I think they get so much protection now. Yeah, I look at different players, and if I'm looking at someone that I want to play with and link with, I would probably look at the current situation would be Bernardo Silva at Manchester City. I just think, again, this thing that people always think physical presence and height and all this stuff, it's all nonsense if you're good with the ball and you see things and you're creative. He can do the hard work, but can also do the really clever work. I think when I see him with the ball, he looks as if he can find a pass at any given time. And I think when I could see players like that, I would be really attracted to try and get some sort of a coordination going with him so you could get some movement into your play. I just love the style of this little guy. I mean, we've had the David Silvers at Manchester City, we've had De Bruyne, some great, great footballers. But I just look at his style of play. It's so kind of Iniesta type that I love those type of footballers. They're really standout footballers for me. They just make me smile. When I talk about them and I see them in a smile because they make footballers look at the game as if this is pretty easy, isn't it? And you think it ain't easy. It ain't even easy now. But I just love watching somebody like him. I think he's an absolute superstar.
Charlie, thanks very much indeed for joining us. Next time on Football's Greatest, we're discussing the game's best ever leaders with the Liverpool legend, Phil Thompson.
And I'm looking behind me like that, and these two are jumping up, nearly heading the ceiling. Come on! And I'm going, like that. And this is, I'm going into battle, because that's what it was, England, Scotland. And I'm looking at Terry and Maris jumping up there, and I'm going, let's go.
Remember to subscribe to the show on YouTube and follow us on your favourite podcast platform. Thanks for joining us. Football's Greatest is a Folding Pocket production with BBC Studios.